Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Now, here's the question. What do Lady Gaga, Kristen Stewart, Ben Kingsley, Daniel Day-Lewis and Denzel Washington all have in common? That's right, they're all actors. Well, actually, they're all actors who have taken on the challenge of playing a real-life person. For some actors, portraying a real-life person seems like a path to an Oscar, giving them a chance to do their best method acting or whatever and clean up at awards ceremonies. In other cases, the people being portrayed have their noses put out of joint. Well, Brian Lloyd, the movies editor at entertainment.ie, is here now to have a look at some of the standout performances when actors played real people. So, Brian, first of all, the potential pitfalls. Yeah. What are they when an actor takes on a real character?
Well, I suppose for the actor themselves, like, I mean, the big thing would be the actual pressure of taking it on, because, like, I suppose, you know, with a fictional character, it's obviously up to the actor and the writer to kind of define it in a sort of way that audience will understand. But when it's a real life character, you know, whether it's somebody like, you know, Princess Diana, or if it's somebody a little bit more kind of unknown, like, say, Patricia Reggiani in that House of Gucci thing, there is still evidence, you know, that sort of way. There is still evidence, and there people do have a frame of reference and a frame of comparison. So then people will become much more, I would say, judgmental, you know, that sort of way. Like, you will have that kind of frame of reference of like, oh, he looked nothing like that, or she sounded nothing like that. And that can then kind of, I suppose, hurt the film's, I suppose, credibility and hurt the film's interpretation of the events. I mean, like, Will Smith is an example. Like, I mean, he's played, like, Muhammad Ali, and more recently he played Richard Williams.
Yeah, he's up for it. Like, he's the most likely Oscar contender at the moment for that, in terms of Serena and Thingamabob's father, in terms of tennis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, like, with Ali and stuff, like, he was very adamant that he didn't want it, and he turned it down for something like 8 years. But, I mean, I think Ali, for my money, I think Ali is probably his best performance, because, like, you go back and watch some of the behind-the-scenes documentary stuff, like, and they put, there's a great scene in one of those behind-the-scenes things where he actually gets in the ring with the real Muhammad Ali, and he had the voice down perfect.
Yeah.
Like, you really couldn't. I mean, it's not just the voice, obviously. He obviously had the physicality. You know, he'd bulked up, he'd started boxing, he had his hair cut the exact way. But, I think, like, Will Smith and Ali, I mean, he should have absolutely won for that. Like, and then, you know, whatever about, you know, the whole thing about King Richard, that, you know, it's not focused on Serena and Venus, and those are the ones that actually made the, that actually did all the work. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't really that kind of blown away by King Richard. I thought it was grand. I thought he was great in it, but I thought the film around him was quite...
When does that come out? Is it out already?
That's it now. Okay. It's pretty I mean, it's good, but it's kind of...
No, I know that he did say recently in an interview that he was really scared in the cinema when the two sisters came to watch it, and they were blubbing and crying by the end, so he knew it worked very well. But he did also say that when he went to the Ali movie, and he was sitting behind Muhammad Ali, he saw Muhammad kind of leaning into his wife going, geez, was I that crazy? And you think, oh God, how bad is this going to be? Okay, so that's Will Smith. Let's take a look at some others then. Like, the kind of considerations when you take on a real life character, like, you know, do you go all method? Do you go right in body and soul? Do you?
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends for every actor. I mean, you go to somebody like, say, Daniel Day-Lewis, for example, who's, you know, notorious for his method acting kind of thing. You know, for something like Lincoln, for example, or when he played Christy Brown in My Left Foot, you know, his commitment to the performance, I think, helped him in the sense of it actually helped him to understand the mindset. Because, you know, there was that famous thing when he was on the set of My Left Foot, he stayed in character when the camera was off, and then the stagehands or whatever had to pick him up and lift him and put him down, what have you. And he could feel their kind of resentment and, like, you're perfectly capable of doing this, would you just get up and help us? But he needed to kind of understand that kind of, to feel how that resentment felt, and then that kind of went into his performance. Now, I mean, you know, like, the thing about method acting is, and, you know, I think a lot of actors, it's not that it's gotten a bad rep, but it's one of those things that it's come to kind of be linked with a lot of not disturbing behavior, but kind of problematic behavior on set, because there was that famous story that Jared Leto, when he was doing Suicide Squad, and he was playing the Joker, and he was playing this, like, very kind of evil character, and seemingly he sent, like, a used condom, and he used, like, a dead rat, and he apparently sent all these weird gifts to his fellow cast because he thought, oh, that's what the Joker would do. you know, that kind of way. And you get, when you hear stories like that, you just kind of roll your eyes.
Well, do you know, it's funny. There was some kind of a, I don't know what it was. It was some late, late show thing many, many, many years ago. And I was doing something down in somewhere part of Dublin about something to do with it. But anyway, the point about it is that Jerry Conlon came in and he was with Daniel Day-Lewis. And honestly, I didn't know which was which. I didn't know which. Well, like, they would come over and I was talking to them for a few minutes. And for a second, like, he was so getting into character of Jerry Conlon weeks before they made the movie In the Name of the Father. It was really kind of weird. And I'll tell you what, it does work for him. He's the only actor in the history of Hollywood that's won Best Actor Award three times. I mean,
three times.
Others have won, you know, Oscars three times, but not all for Best Actor, you know.
Someone
it might be supporting. So he won three Best Actors, and here he is as Lincoln.
If the work is going the way you hope it'll go, I begin to hear a voice, not in the supernatural sense, but just as we have an inner eye, we have an inner ear as well. And I begin to hear a voice, and then if that voice pleases me, I then have the problem of trying to reproduce it, which is a whole other thing.
And the funny thing is about Abraham Lincoln's voice is that there's very little or very few known recordings of it, and he kept the accent offset the whole time making the movie. Okay, tell me a few other people.
Well, Denzel Washington and Malcolm X, I mean.
Right.
Now, what's interesting about this is that initially there was this huge protest over Malcolm X, because initially there was a director called Norman Jewison who would go on to do The Hurricane, actually, with Denzel Washington. He was initially lined up to direct it, and there was huge protest because a lot of people in the black community felt that a black director should direct it. And then, of course, Spike Lee, who was leading those protests, ended up directing it. But, you know, Denzel Washington, he had actually previously, not many people know this, he had actually previously played Malcolm X before in this play called When the Chickens Come Home to Roost.
Right.
So, and it's interesting, like, you know, you listen to contemporaneous interviews that Denzel Washington did, and he's very kind of gung-ho about it. Like, he's just like, yep, I played him before. I knew how to do it. You know, obviously he went off and, you know, he interviewed people who knew Malcolm X. He listened to hours of, you know, all the speeches and the footages, and Malcolm X's wife, Dr. Betty Shabazz, she was a consultant on the film as well. But, you know, you go back and watch it. You go back and watch Malcolm X. I mean, the performance that he gives in that is incredible. It is honestly, I think it is his best performance, and he really should have won an Oscar that year. He lost out to Al Pacino for Ascent of the Scent of a Woman. But his performance, like, he's so electric. Like, he really has that kind of righteous anger, and when he's shouting from the, not even shouting, but when he's really kind of like, you know, speaking so forcefully from the pulpit, you can really feel how an audience would be completely captured by him and would be completely devoted to him and would completely understand that anger and that kind of indignation that he felt.
All right, well, we heard Daniel Day-Lewis talking about Abraham Lincoln's voice. Here's Denzel Washington on playing Malcolm X.
And because it was Spike, I had the freedom to fail, to try anything. I would put speeches together. They just kept loading the cameras. I kept talking. I talked anything. White shoes. Oh, that's the black man is trying to get on top of the white man. And he tries to muscle us with those socks. That's the black man that he's strangling from every side. So you could, I would learn all of his speeches and just go.
Wow.
And Spike would just kept loading the camera.
Wow, fantastic.
No disrespect to white people or sneakers.
What about Ben Kingsley and Gandhi?
Yeah, I mean, Ben Kingsley, his father is from Gujarat, which is a state in India, and his birth name is Krishna Banji. So he had, you know, a bit more kind of connection with the character. But it's funny, I mean, Alec Guinness, if you can believe it, was initially considered to play Gandhi. And I mean, that's not unusual. Like, Alec Guinness played King Faisal in Lawrence of Arabia. And of course, what's his name? Quinn played
Quinn. Yeah.
Anthony Quinn. Yeah, played an Arab as well in that. So, and he's not that at all. But yeah, you know, Ben Kingsley, like, there was a lot of discussion in kind of recent years about Gandhi himself, and that, you know, the film kind of mythologized certain parts of it, and it, you know, when the real Gandhi was a lot more complex than it was made out to be. But, you know, the way that Ben Kingsley played it, like, he, you know, he, it starts off as a young man and it carries right through to the end, and he had to, you know, age himself up each time, and it's completely seamless. Like, you watch it and it's completely seamless, and he does have that kind of real kind of quiet energy, that quiet power about him. And like Ben Kingsley, like, you know, obviously, you know, he learned how to do yoga, he learned how to sew like Gandhi did and everything else, and it's all there in the screen. Like, I mean, you know, it won all the Oscars, it became the highest grossing quote foreign film in India. And, you know, people still talk about it to this day, like, and rightfully so. Like, it's a brilliant film.
All right, well, Ben Kingsley becoming Gandhi.
At the end of the makeup test for the older Gandhi, and I looked at myself in the mirror and I thought, this is as close as you may ever get to being him. And I stared at myself in the mirror and, my goodness, chaps, I looked jolly like him at the end of that makeup test.
Ben Kingsley it is. We're talking about actors playing real people, and we're here with Brian Lloyd. Now, let's take a look at this here. Where do we go with all the actors who really or didn't really play Bob Dylan in I'm Not There? Explain that one.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen I'm Not There, and it's a great film, but have you seen it?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really different way to do a Bob Dylan, or to do in any movie, frankly.
Yeah, so if you've never seen it, essentially it's these series of characters who aren't Bob Dylan, but they are Bob Dylan. They effectively represent different parts of his career. So
yeah.
Christian Bale plays this priest that kind of represents his protest phase. Cate Blanchett represented his electric phase, the sort of shock of it, having a woman play Cate Blanchett. Marcus Carl Franklin plays Woody, which is obviously an allusion to Woody Guthrie. Richard Gere is in there. I mean, it's, yeah, I really do love I'm Not There. And I have to say, like, I think, you know, for an artist like Bob Dylan, who would be kind of like David Bowie in the sense of that he was constantly reinventing himself, there's no real way you could do it without being kind of weird and being kind of unique about it. And fair play to director Todd Haynes, like, because he knew that it was going to be a tough task. So rather than try to do the kind of conventional thing of getting one actor and, you know, aging them up and aging them down and getting them to cut their hair and do this, that and the other, he just threw the entire rule book out and said, right, I'm going to literally get, you know, a black actor to play Bob Dylan. I'm going to get a woman to play Bob Dylan. I'm going to have a priest play Bob Dylan and do all these sorts of things. And it worked. And, you know, it's, by all accounts, Bob Dylan seemed to like it himself. I mean, there was an interview he did with Rolling Stone, and, you know, he Bob Dylan kind of said, like, you know, do you think the director was worried what people understood it? I don't think he cared a bit. I just think he wanted to make a good movie, and it looked good and the actors were incredible. And that's true. I mean, every performance in it. I think Cate Blanchett really was the standout.
Well, here, I'll give you her. This is Cate Blanchett, Bob Dylan.
I tell you, love and sex are two things that really hang people up. And why that is, well, I'll never fully understand.
Okay, let's take a couple more. We're talking about actors playing real people here and the challenges that are posed because of it. And Margot Robbie is Tonya Harding and I, Tonya?
And I, Tonya, yeah. So she trained for 4 months to learn how to ice skate and initially didn't even actually realise that the story in I, Tonya was real, because obviously she's Australian. But an interesting point, Jeff Galooly, who was the partner of Tonya Harding and was actually involved in the whole plot, he refused any payment for interviews for the film, and he didn't accept any money for his life rights because he said that he didn't want to profit from. Yeah, which is unusual because, like, most times when, you know, when it's something like this and when it's something a bit kind of dodgy, usually the people involved are like, I'll take all the money I can get or something. But yeah, he refused to take any money of it. But, like, you know, you go back and watch it. Like, I mean, Margot Robbie, I mean, she's, you know, famously one of the most beautiful women in the world. And when you watch the film, like, her cheeks are all bright red, her hair is all frizzy, like, she looks rough, like, the way that kind of Tonya Harding looked quite rough and ready. And, you know, I mean, that is kind of an obvious thing for actresses like Margot Robbie that are known for their looks. They kind of had to kind of uglyfy themselves in order to be kind of taken seriously. But in I, Tonya, I feel like it actually served a purpose. It wasn't just, you know, for the sake of it, it actually served a purpose. And I mean, like, the movie, like, frequently acknowledges that it takes liberties with the story, but the way that it does it, I think, was really interesting. It kind of has the characters literally turn to the screen and say, actually, no, this didn't happen.
Never gonna let me skate again? I can't ever... I mean, I'd rather do the jail time, please. They only got 18 months. They got 18 months. I'll do that. You can't... Your Honor, I don't have an education. All I know is skating. That's all I know. And I am no one if I can't skate.
And there you go, that's Margot Robbie as Tonya Harding. I, Tonya, being the movie. Let's take one last one, Brian. And that's Jesse Eisenberg, yep. Mark Zuckerberg, Social Network. One of the best movies of the last 10 years.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think as well the fact that, you know, Jesse Eisenberg, I think he did it so well as Mark Zuckerberg that every role he's played after the fact has just been some sort of variation on Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah. It's true, but like you look at something like... Even Vivarium, for example, that Irish one he did.
He's kind of like nervy all the time, isn't he?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I mean, I know there's, you know, like, that'd be like saying Al Brooks is nervy, like that, and he's in that in every film. I mean, I know there are actors that do have that kind of presence or whatever, but it felt like with Jesse Eisenberg, once he played Mark Zuckerberg, he just didn't know how to do any other kind of role. But, it's interesting, like, I mean, Mark Zuckerberg famously hated this film, said it was completely inaccurate, that it didn't, tell the truth about it at all, which I think is kind of ironic because, you know, Facebook is now so well known for disinformation and what have you, that it seems funny that the creator of it is giving out about falsehoods. But Aaron Sorkin, who wrote it, I mean, he had said in an interview that, like, you know, what's the whole thing about accuracy? When does accuracy get in the way of good storytelling? Like, no one is watching The Social Network or any of these films for that matter and thinking that they're documentaries. There is an element of storytelling in it. But yeah, I mean, the way that Jesse Eisenberg played it, I mean, he had all the clothes right and he had the hair and he actually looked quite like Mark Zuckerberg. But the way that he played it, I thought was brilliant because, you know, it's that kind of teenage thing of he thinks he's in complete control. He thinks he has won over on everybody. But the reality of it is that he is just this child constantly acting out and trying to kind of get everyone to either hate him or love him, you know, that kind of way. And the role, I think, really suited him because I feel like Jesse Eisenberg, he kind of understood a little bit of that, or certainly, you know, was able to get into that mind space that Zuckerberg clearly, you know, does operate on, because I don't think he would have given out so much if it wasn't telling him.
Do you know
something
you said there at the beginning? Do you think that 10 years later or 9 years later or whatever it was, that actually the way he played Zuckerberg is more proof that he might have got more right now than then?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Like, you look at all the stuff that's happening with Facebook in a minute.
But even the way Zuckerberg has reacted in the last few years to everything that's happening to Facebook, it kind of is even more on the button than I might have realised 7 or 8 years ago.
Totally, yeah. Like, it's petulant. Like, it's petulant. Yeah. It's like, you can't tell me. Who are you to tell me anything? Like, and that's, you know, I was reading, or sorry, I was listening to it. I think it was the New York Times were doing this documentary about Facebook, a podcast rather. And they actually have a saying in Facebook, it's company over country. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the intervening 10 years has really proven that The Social Network was probably more accurate.
But having said that, his nemesis in that movie, which is two people as one person, the Winklevoss twins, that actor has also come up against a lot of problems in recent years.
Yeah.
Which is worse than any of the problems that any of the other people who've been cancelled by Hollywood. I mean, it's really weird stuff. All right, Armie Hammer, indeed. Listen, Brian, thanks a million. Brian Lloyd it is, movies editor of entertainment.ie. Good luck, Brian. Thanks. Fair play.
Thanks. Cheers.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.